Good morning, everybody. The House State Affairs Committee will come to order at approximately 8:07. Present with us this morning, Representative Dahl, Representative Coghill, Vice Chair Roses, and myself, Representative Bob Lynn, the Chair of the Committee. And and Representative John has been excused from the committee meeting this morning, I just learned. And also, Representative Grunberg is also excused from the committee. I did have a conversation with him about one of the bills we're going to hear this morning, and he's improving, doing better. He may be back perhaps by Friday, maybe by Monday, but he's doing well. So, praise God for that. This morning we have two bills before us, HB 269, which requires flags manufactured in the United States. American flags and Alaskan flags should be manufactured in the United States of America. And the second one is Representative Hawker's bill, HB 284, PFD allowable absences and fellowships. And I'm going to go ahead and, Representative Hawker, are you prepared to go first on this?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay. We'll go first with your bill, and please come join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a pleasure to be here before you. For your records, I am Representative Mike Hawker, representing District 32. I will take your silence, sir, as approval to proceed.
You have approval to proceed.
Thank you, sir.
Full speed ahead, torpedoes out.
Well, it is my great pleasure today to be before you and provide this committee an opportunity to do a good thing. This bill.
Everything we do here, Mr. Hawker, is a good thing in this committee.
This one is clearly a good thing.
Object.
You know, we all, it's you know, in this committee, you all see, all those issues that affect the affairs of state, things that really get down and affect individual people in our state. And perhaps there is nothing more personal in Alaska these days than the permanent fund dividend, something extraordinarily unique to Alaska. But in the nature of that program, it requires some very careful strictures to make sure it only goes to those people who we want it to go to. And that would be the clear original intent of that program was that folks would be Alaska residents living here in Alaska. Then, once you create the general rule, there's always the exceptions. And likewise, the first exception that was ever identified, it said, well, what about young Alaskans? Our best, brightest young kids who are going to school, and they're out of state for a portion, a significant portion of a year, and they don't meet the very tight strictures that were established in statute to define Alaska resident, which meant living in the state, residing physically in the state. They're out at school. So the very first exceptions to the thou shalt live in Alaska exception were the exceptions for receiving secondary or post-secondary education on a full-time basis, or receiving vocational, professional, or other specific education on a full-time basis. Those two exceptions seem to be very broad, and I noticed or emphasized the word receiving was the basis. Well, a situation was brought to me by one of my constituents, and subsequently I've discovered at least one other person in the state of Alaska, Juneau resident, who I believe the law clearly intended should be benefiting from those educational exemptions. However, our regulatory process has determined they don't. And believe it or not, those are Alaska citizens, Alaska students, who are studying abroad on the prestigious Fulbright Scholarship. I think you've seen in your packet a little explanation of the Fulbright program, but this is a program that was established by the United States government, administered by our Department of State, that it was commenced in 1946, right on the heels of World War II. The program originally began with using the proceeds of the sales of World War II surplus government inventory to send Alaska students abroad to study with folks, to learn more, to share more of America, to learn more about foreign countries. We're really, the world had just gone through the incredible trauma of World War II, which was really a reaction, sort of ended world isolationism for everyone. So this, again, this Fulbright program has grown to where there are thousands of students study abroad each year from across America. But sadly, our regulators, the people that write the regulations here, determined that our students studying abroad on that program do not qualify for the existing exemption that is, I believe, clearly in statute, where it says receiving secondary, post-secondary education or receiving vocational, professional, other specific education. And I'll be very frank with the committee. I'm a person who is very much opposed to broadening the exceptions we have to the permanent fund dividend residency requirement. It took me a long time to decide to bring this bill forward, but I believe it is a bill that clarifies the original legislative intent of that educational exemption and truly respects Alaska's best and brightest students who really made this extraordinary accomplishment of becoming a Fulbright scholar. So, you know, that is very simply. Actually, I'd like to also, if I can have one more moment there, I would like our first, as a legislative office, our first approach when we learned about this from our constituent, was to approach the Permanent Fund Dividend Division and ask if they could amend their regulations that essentially exclude these Fulbright scholars. And Ms. Richter, who is the head of that division, worked diligently with us. She put her all into fixing this issue regulatorily, but I say, like all of us, she found that we oftentimes seem to legislate by regulation, and the regulators sometimes seem to have more authority than we do. So this was one of those times where we need to stand up, use our legislative authority, and tell the regulators, you are wrong. So I'd appreciate your consideration and support for this proposal, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Rogers.
Thank you. Would this also cover individuals that would be, say, Rhodes Scholars or would be studying in other type of advanced degrees in a foreign country? Because we have actually quite a number of students across the state that often qualify for that. They don't necessarily always participate.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not positive that it encompasses the Rhodes Scholar. Julie's going to check me. Thank you very much. This is why I have my ever-competent Ms. Lucky back here. As this issue came up and they delved into it, Rhodes Scholars are already recognized.
Okay, good.
As our understanding. And emphasize the language in the bill. We needed it to be, sufficiently broad because, like things, we tend not to reference things that might change by name in our statutes, which is why the language in the bill before you recognizes participating for educational purposes in a student fellowship sponsored by the U.S. Department of Education or Department of State. So any program that would exist under those strictures would be covered here.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have one more.
One more question.
Would the similar requirement of, say, for example, a person that's in the military is covered as long but they must return to the state. Would that be the case here? Do they have to return to state in order to still qualify, or do they get it while they're attending their education?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, the requirement that an Alaska abroad intends to return to Alaska as a qualifying condition to receive a permanent fund dividend exists elsewhere in statute and is not affected by this proposal.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Conger.
My guess is the student fellowship then obviously goes beyond the allowance for being out of Alaska. Have you looked at other fellowships to see where they might fall in this area? Are there any other, because you say sponsored by Department of Education and Department of State, is there any other program that falls within that category that you're aware of?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, myself, no. However, as always, it's our aides that sometimes do most of the detailed research. I may not have exactly an accurate answer to that question, but I'm not aware of any. The intent of this particular piece of legislation is to wrap up those Fulbright scholars.
Okay, and then for the Fulbright scholarship, I just kind of breezed through that. What is the timeline on it? Is that a two-year scholarship?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, there are a number of different scholarships, programs, durations, some long, some short, that the Fulbright sponsors. You will have the ability to interview today my constituent, Mr. Rob Coolin, who is online to testify.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? If no other questions, no amendments. If not, I'm prepared to entertain a motion on this bill.
Do we have people to testify?
Oh, I beg your pardon. My God. How about that? Okay. We have Emily Furry. Are you here, Emily? Thank you. Thanks a million.
Thank you for this opportunity. And my name is Emily Ferry. I live at 836 Calhoun here in Juneau. I also wanted to thank Representative Hawker for introducing this bill. My husband, Demian Shane, is one of the Fulbright recipients who is hoping to get a PFD. We both are. Last fall, of October 2006, we left Alaska for Iceland for 10 months. And as part of our sabbatical, as a way, the Fulbright scholarship differs from other fellowship programs in that you don't have to be attached with an educational institution. Oftentimes you are, but it's more like a sabbatical for professionals where you can create your own research opportunities or your own educational experience. So in his case, Demian worked researching the EU regulations of farmed fish and how that affects wild populations. And I got the opportunity to work with the School for Renewable Energy Science. So while we were in Iceland for 10 months, those were our primary projects. And then we also had the opportunity to take a few classes. Some were in Arctic anthropology. Others were in NGO development. And then we also had the intercultural experience, which I found incredibly valuable, just getting another perspective on the world. So in July, we turned to Alaska. We bought a home here. And we have found new jobs here as a result, but I believe our experience was incredibly valuable, both personally, and it also has increased our skills and our experience and our tools that we bring to the state, and that we intend to stay here and share those tools. So I really hope that you support this amendment, this change to the bill. I think that we should be encouraging young Alaskans, all Alaskans, to go out and experience the world and come back and bring these skills and tools back here. So hopefully we won't get punished for doing that, and you can make this change. So.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a
doll.
Thank you, Emily, for coming. I don't know hardly anything about the Fulbright scholarships, but are they typically 10 months?
They are. There's a range of different programs. I believe the typical timeline is 10 months, but you can go for 3 months. There's all sorts of different arrangements with different countries, and you can go anywhere in the world. The U.S. partners with the other countries, so it's jointly funded. So it's kind of each program in each country is a little bit different. But again, it's you don't have to be enrolled in an educational institution either here or abroad. So it is a unique opportunity that mid-career you can take a break and go out and do some reflection and research and something a little bit different from the traditional career path.
I guess one of my questions here is that it can be considerably longer than 10 months. It could be a year or 2 years or something and involve travel on top of the scholarship, perhaps. I'm just trying to get a sense of what we're looking at in terms of length of time.
No, these are good questions. My experience is that 10 months is the maximum amount of time, but Representative Hawker's staff may have more information on that. With the Fulbright scholarship is to get people overseas, and a big part of it is the intercultural experience. And so you will be going abroad. In our case, we not only got to go to Iceland, but also to Greece for a conference on fish farming there. So it can involve some other travel. But during that time, you're also considered a resident of the U.S. In fact, the scholarship comes from the State Department, so they consider you one of their own.
Right. Thank you.
Were you also under a fellowship?
Through the chair, because we were married, I think that we got an extra $300 a month for my presence and participation there. And so also through the existing statute, I would be covered as the spouse. And then I found my own experience, my own internship, so to speak, with the School for Renewable Energy Science.
So the net effect, if I may continue, net effect was that they lost the permanent fund dividend for the year that you were gone, but you also have to stay out a year to regain residency. Is that correct? So you lose it 2 years?
You know, my husband has done a lot more research in this, and I believe for us, we will be eligible this coming year, but this year, but not last year. It also has to do with the amount of time that we were gone and when we left and when we returned. So I believe it's 1 year, but it's for two of us, and so it does have a big impact on us financially.
Thank you. I do have some other questions, but I'll wait until after Rob testifies.
Okay. Also, I believe, and I meant to mention that Representative Johansson joined us several minutes ago. Representative Johansson?
Just because I was a former staffer, and I know how much hard work staff puts into the committee packets, I believe the answer to your question, the United States Student Program offers one academic year of study. And I think Julie could correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of that information is in the packet that I think we should all be familiar with before we get to the committee. Thank you.
Yeah, take that.
Any other question? Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. Do we have Rob Kulin here? Online or in the audience?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am online here.
Yes, sir. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rob Kulin. I'm from Anchorage, born and raised, and I'm currently a graduate student at University of California, San Diego, studying materials engineering. I was fortunate enough to receive the Fulbright for the 2004 to 2005 school year to perform research at the Politecnico di Milano. In Milan, Italy. My Fulbright was actually between degree programs. I had deferred here at San Diego for a year in order to participate and had recently graduated from undergrad. I believe Emily was the last speaker's name, and if I recall correctly, she mentioned that it's in many ways a professional growth program. However, most of the Fulbrights that I knew in Italy were actually enrolled in degree programs in the U.S. or, as myself, between programs, and thus not officially affiliated with any direct university except for wherever we performed our research. When I was in Italy, I was studying the fatigue of polymer composites, basically how composites break over extended loading periods. But I guess the strength of the Fulbright program isn't really in the technical aspects of what you study. In some degrees it is, but the reason to go abroad is for the cultural experience and the understanding that this fosters both of our own understanding and of other people's, of other cultures' understanding our American culture. In Italy, for example, I was actually the only engineer in the, I think, 15 or 20 of us that were awarded that year. The rest were studying art or ancient history of Italy, subjects such as these, which were more relevant to the particular Italian culture. For my own interest, I found a very prestigious research institution there, which allowed me to perform research there. However, as I kind of mentioned before, the biggest thing was really this whole cultural understanding. As many of you may know in the committee here, when you live abroad for some time, you really come up with a new outlook on life and a new understanding of your own culture and of another. Coming back to Alaska, which is very unique in its own culture, I think this is incredibly important. And also to be able to share what Alaska is like to other cultures. I guess I that's about all I have to say on the Fulbright program. Is there anyone that has any questions for me?
Well, any questions for Mr. Kuhn? Thank you very much. Anybody else online? Anybody else in the audience wish to testify on this? If not, I'll close public testimony. What is the will of the committee on this?
I did have a question for the sponsor.
Representative Hawker.
Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, sir.
question I had was, we listened to the great testimony of both of these young people that had a wonderful opportunity through this fellowship, but I'm looking at the effective date on this, and it says January 2009. So that would help fellowships in the future, but wouldn't do a thing for these individuals that did theirs in the past, would it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roses, you raise a very good question. I have two thoughts on that. Number one is, when the record of testimony here is that this is a clarification of our previous legislative intent, I think it gives us a lot more strength with the regulators. But also, knowing that I never really want to place my trust in the regulators, we're working with Tam Cook, who is researching at this moment the best way to look at setting a reasonable retroactive period so we could benefit these folks that have come forward and have recently been, I believe, unfairly treated by our regulatory system. And as this bill does go through another committee and then the floor before it we get a chance to vote on it, I fully intend to pursue that issue before it's complete.
I appreciate that because I don't think it's comes as any surprise to anybody in this building how I have spoken out against retroactivity, not only for taxes but also for punishment and ethics laws and everything else. So there are times in which I think better common sense prevails, and I certainly can see in this case where we have some deserving individuals that have been inadvertently left out of a process. So this may be once I may have to swallow my pride and vote for retroactivity.
Mr. Chairman, I share Representative Rose's philosophy on these issues, and I believe there is a distinct difference between retroactively worsening a taxpayer's position, between retroactively imposing creating a crime, which is actually against the Constitution, and retroactively correcting a wrong.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank the Ways and Means Chairman for bringing this forward. One of our big problems in the state is brain drain, is the smart kids or adults leaving, and whatever we can do to make it better for them to come back, I would support. So thank you for bringing this forward.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative.
I agree totally with it. Any other questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Representative Roses?
Let Andrew. Sure,
Senator. Representative Dahl.
Fight to get to the microphone here. Yes, I recommend moving this bill, 25LS1142/A, House Bill number 284.
Any objection? Without objection, this bill passes. Thank you, Representative Hawker. Good bill.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Would you make the motion again and add the fiscal note?
Yes, I would make this motion again, and please attach the attached fiscal note.
Okay. Without objection.
And as a Finance Committee member, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that record reflect that it is a zero fiscal note.
And you say you are on the Finance Committee.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay. Our next bill is HB 269.
Can we hold until we get this signed?
Yeah. We'll take a short recess while we're signing the paperwork. Come back to order. We'll now be considering HB 269. And as a matter of introduction, I'm just going to read off some comments I made on this. HB 269 does require that official flags of the United States of America and the state of Alaska be manufactured in the United States, and that only such flags be displayed on state buildings and on schools. This bill, of course, is not as complex as a GEER or ACES or anything like that, and on the surface it may not seem to be as important as some of the other issues that we struggle with on this committee and other committees and on the floor. But I submit that this bill is very, very important, and I hope the committee thinks so also. All manner of things and products are imported into our nation, but these items are things, again, things. Our nation's flag is not a thing. It's not just bits of colored cloth sewn together in some kind of pretty pattern. Our flag, I believe, is a unique symbol to which we pledge of allegiance. even on the House floor before we do our other business. We pledge allegiance to the flag because it represents our nation's unique heritage and values for which thousands of Americans have died. Justice Felix Frankfurter described our flag as the symbol of our national life, and I hope you all agree. This bill helps protect the time-honored tradition of American flags being manufactured in America when, according to legend at least, a delegation from the Continental Congress called upon Betsy Ross to sew the first American flag. And again, according to legend, we believe that George Washington may have been a part of that delegation. Now, believe me, I have no problem whatsoever with free trade, so long as it occurs on a level playing field and so long as it doesn't jeopardize national security. Nobody's saying we should not import cars or clothes or a myriad of other things, but please, at least one thing, the American flag, the most important symbol of America, should, in fact, be manufactured in the United States. And I'm not necessarily talking about just... I'm talking about the flag as a whole, not necessarily the dye for the colors or the thread that puts it together, but the flag as a whole. Many of the flags procured by the state are bought to fly over the Capitol building, this building. And it seemed to me that it never occurs to most Alaskans, it had never occurred to me, that the flag they receive may have been made in communist China or some other foreign country, even though it flew over this building. A couple of years ago, a young Marine from my district serving in Iraq asked my office for an Alaska flag so he could proudly display it in his tent in Iraq so his buddies could see it. Well, I don't have any idea where that flag was manufactured, hopefully in America. But we should have been able to know, and this bill would have made that possible. The sad fact is that young Marine is killed in action soon after he received the flag and soon after put it up in his tent. Another fact is that Marine's mother is now a staffer for Senator Huggins, and I hope that flag was in fact made in America. I have a letter of support from Anchorage 650 KENI talk show host Mike Porcaro, who's in strong support of this bill, and he was going to testify this morning. He was unable to do that. The fact is it was Mike Porcaro's comments on one of his radio shows that gave me the idea for this bill, made me aware of it. Mike is, as those of us who live in Anchorage Bowl know, is usually very shy and subtle when he makes comments on the show. But when talking about the flag on a show, he was not so subtle. I detected he, in fact, had an opinion on the subject of the flag. In summary, we're talking about the American flag, and it seemed to me an American flag should be an American flag. Same for the Alaska flag. I'm going to read. Letter from Mike Picard is in the in your packet. I believe this letter from the American Legion is also in your national chapter of the American Legion. I had a telephone call from our colleague Max Grunberg, who I said before has been excused meeting and could not make it today because he's been ill. And he has sought a legal opinion on this, which I've passed out to the committee. Raises some issues. I don't have much patience on issues concerning the flag, but as a courtesy to our colleague, Representative Grunberg, if it's the will of the committee, I'm going to hold the bill for another hearing while we examine his issues and talk about it. But I would like to continue having some discussion on the bill today, and I would invite Vern Jones to join us. You might be able to make some comment on this. The legal opinion, our memorandum, which is passed out today, this concerns the Commerce Clause of the Constitution of the United States of America. And it goes into that how people can hold criminally liable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the last paragraph... said, my search has revealed no state or federal cases addressing a requirement that flag be manufactured in the United States. So we're going to check into this some more and have it ready for the next committee meeting, if that's the desire of the committee. Welcome, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Vern Jones. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for the State of Alaska, and I'm here representing the Division of General Services as well as the Department of Administration. I certainly agree, and our department and our commissioner agrees and supports this bill for all the reasons that you have stated. My division manages 13 state office buildings. That's not by any means a majority of the buildings that the state owns. That is probably a majority of the multi-use office buildings that fly flags out there, although there are a lot of other departments. In fact, most departments have property and flags, I would imagine. As far as the Division of General Services is concerned, this bill will have no fiscal impact for us. We have for many, many years adhered to the principles of the bill. We only buy flags and display flags that are manufactured in the U.S., so the bill would have no fiscal impact on us. And in speaking as the Chief Procurement Officer and looking at the numbers of flags that the state buys on the whole, I would say that that's probably true for any other department or branch out there, even if they're not adhering to the spirit of the bill. Currently, I would say to do so will have no or negligible impact, fiscal impact on those other entities as well.
Okay, any questions, Mr. Jones?
I had a question.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. And it's nice to hear that that is the policy you've been following, even though it isn't in statute. I very much support the concept of the bill, but one of the concerns that I have would be, we'll use schools for an example. Every classroom in every school that I've ever been in has an American flag in it, and an Alaska flag of the ones that have been here in Alaska. Many of those procurements are done for a lot of the outlying villages by one procurement center, and they're all sent out. And so what I don't want to see happen is for some school to be challenged over the fact that they don't have a flag that's manufactured in the United States when the people in that school had no control over where or how that procurement occurred. And so I don't want to set people up to be violating a statute when they had no control over the possibility of that. But the question that I had for you was, right now in your procurement procedures, when you are taking a look at bidders that are coming in on a procurement opportunity, is it done on a point system so that if it's manufactured in Alaska, they have a certain leverage over someone of, say, that might have a little bit less of a bid, but because of the point system, you would go with the Alaska company?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, generally speaking, the way you would buy a flag or any other commodity would be through a price selection. It wouldn't be an evaluation like an RFP, say. So it would be based on price. And in that respect, an Alaskan flag would not necessarily a U.S.-made flag would not necessarily score any higher, but if the person selling it was an Alaskan, they would certainly get the Alaska bidder preference, but there would be no preference there for a U.S.-made item.
So we do have an Alaska, if I may continue.
Yes, please.
We do have an Alaska bidder preference. I guess the question I would be under certain like this, would it solve the problem if we had a U.S. manufacturer's bidder preference?
That's a difficult question to answer. I'm thinking through all the other impacts that would have and the complications that might arise from that. Certainly it would give an advantage to those people that are selling U.S. made products, including flags. Whether it would solve the problem or not, I think probably the bill you have before you is a more direct route for that.
Okay. Thank you.
The chair of the committee obviously has apologies, but we already have food for you back there, so I paid my dues up.
So it means you knew it was going to ring?
I knew it was going to ring.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
That brought up an interesting point, because it seemed to me like when we were talking about bidding for other things, whether it was snow machines or automobiles. In the procurement code, there was a U.S. manufacturer preference that was a percentage. So I think for a U.S. manufacturer, there has been kind of a continued preference in some of the bids that I've done. So maybe that was just a contractual thing, not a procurement thing then.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, there is no U.S. manufactured product preference in our procurement code. There is, however, an Alaska product preference in our code that provides three levels of preferences depending on the percentage of the product that's manufactured in Alaska.
My memory does get jogged, Mr. Chairman. I think most of the bids I did were federal related, but I think there is some U.S. manufacturer preference on scoring. You can lose the bid, but you still get a score preference. So
I would think that'd be not only for the flag bill we're considering today, but for everything that we buy here. But that's I digress. But it's something we need to look at. Representative Congo.
I think the question that Representative Roses brings up is something we should consider as since we're going to hold the bill. Do we need to have an amendment that keeps people from being penalized for that inadvertence of somebody buying a handful of flags for a school event that you might buy from one of those catalogs that you buy all the things that are made in some other country? Boy, that would be it would be a shame for that to become a controversial issue when they're really trying to do the right thing. So,
is there any possibility we could beg your pardon?
You want me to talk about something?
If there's an answer to that question, let's get it.
Our chief of staff has some comments on this.
I'm Nancy Manley, and I'm staff to Representative Lynn. Chief of staff. And there.
She made me say that.
Yeah, our bill only requires that these flags that are flown, you know, at the buildings, and I guess the intent was that they would be flown like outside on the flagpole or something like that, because we talked about that, you know, when we were discussing whether this would go down to the size pin, you know, the little pins or whatever, and we wondered if we should put a size in there or whatever, but we're just, you know, the intent is that these are flags that are officially flown.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Congo.
So is that what Section 1 and 2 are saying? You have it narrowly crafted, and help me understand what Title 14 and Title 15 then.
You know, we've got Dennis Bailey on that can express, you know, because we asked him about size, and he stated that it was the flags, you know, this would kind of identify the type of flag it was, and we wouldn't have to worry about flag pins or some little, you know, flags that they might want to fly, you know, the little ones.
Yeah, that's a good point, because usually when we get our little state pins,
right,
I take them right out of the plastic because it says made in Taiwan on it.
Make a note of that.
But anyway, if we could get the answer from Mr. Bailey, I would appreciate that.
Mr. Bailey online? Mr. Bailey?
Yes, I'm here and listening in.
Reverend Cocker, would ask Mr. Bailey your question.
The question, Mr. Bailey, is what is the scope of the types of flags that we're talking about here? You've heard the discussion that in classrooms, whether you buy a you know, a 24 by 40 inch flag or things like that that a teacher may buy, or a civics group may buy and have in an official setting. So help me understand the scope of Title 14 and 15 with regard to the procurement the procurement mandate, I guess.
Well, let me start by saying the statute defines a flag and gives the dimension and proportions and what's included on the flag. That's the section that does that is section 4409, which is amended by section 4 of the bill. So that would be an additional consideration besides the changes in Title 14 and Title 15. But the question about whether a pin would constitute a flag is one that I think that the general, well, there's no definition that a flag has to be made of cloth, but the am I coming through okay?
Yes, you're coming through fine.
Okay. I don't think that a pin, let me just to shorten it all, I don't think a pin is a flag, even though it might display a flag on the pin.
Yeah, we had quite a discussion on that in our office because the clear intent was somebody flown over building a large standard type flag, not something you'd wave in your hand or on your T-shirt.
Yeah, I might add that there's no, as I said, no definition in the statute that says a flag is made of cloth. But the in the absence of a statutory definition, the standard definition or the layman's definition would work, and I think that it's reasonable to say that a flag is normally considered something that flies or is made of cloth.
I agree.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, so I understand that we have the definition of the state flag in Title 44. And that now we put a mandate that they must be manufactured in the United States. And then the displaying requirements under Section 1, Title 14, the display requirement now says they must be required to be manufactured in the United States. And then when we display flags at voting booths under Title 15, the question that I had is, in almost every school, many civic organizations, whether they be a meeting of a local civics group, a political party, do we start running afoul of then picking on each other because we're going to go around looking at tags on the flag? That's the question I have. How far of a scope does this go?
Well, there are two sections, and particularly in S4409030, which talks about the display of flags. The section that's pertinent there would be the one that requires the flag to be displayed in main administration building of every institution under the authority or control of state government. And I think the operative words there are control buildings under the control of state government. Not entirely certain about whether the restriction for the main administration building of such an institution would be limiting. But I think the concept there is if it's a state building, or the flag would be displayed. And the second requirement is that it be displayed in or near schoolhouses during school days. Those, I think, are relatively straightforward requirements. I'm sure somebody can come up with a situation on the fringe, but the concept is the flags flown in state buildings and schools.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And while we have you on the line, Representative Rhodes, you want to ask him about your comment, how to protect some of the outlying areas, potential amendment or...
No, well, the comment that I had was what I don't want to see happen is have, you know, say a procurement officer that is purchasing flags for four or five or six different outlying school districts where they consolidate and go through one purchasing agent.
Representative Rose,
they post the flags in the school and they have no idea who's, you know, where they've been manufactured. The individual school doesn't necessarily go and check on it. It's up to whoever did the procurement. And I don't want them to end up in the middle of a controversy over something over which they had no control.
Mr. Bailey.
I guess I think that's a potential problem in the bill about who purchases the flag, what the penalties are. The memo that I sent out this morning talks about the penalties for each of the particular sections that are changed by the bill. Those penalties are not insubstantial, and I presume they would apply to the person who has control over the flag that's flown.
Okay, and we did receive, remember, we just received it as the committee started, so we haven't had a chance to really go through this, you know, line by line. Would you care to give us just a quick synopsis of it? We intend to hold this bill to resolve some of these issues, but if you could give maybe a quick overview on the memorandum you sent to this morning, then when we meet the next time, we can go into more detail with it, perhaps.
I guess through the chair, or Representative Lynn, the memo basically is a plea for more time. The issue of whether the requirement of purchasing only U.S. flags would be a violation of some portion of the Constitution related to foreign commerce or treaties or some other aspect of the Constitution was just brought to my attention late yesterday afternoon, and I really hadn't had a chance to look at it very closely, and I still haven't.
And this request is from our colleague, Representative Grunberg, is that correct?
That's right, and that's who the memo is addressed to. On the penalty issue, the second paragraph of the memo basically says that for failure to I really couldn't find any statutory penalty for failure to display a flag under Section 1403.130, which is changed by Section 1 of the bill. The penalty for an elected official who fails to comply with the election statute, it probably falls under the crime of election official misconduct, although I think that there's an intent requirement that it's an intentional failure to perform election duty, and I think this would become an election duty under Title 15, and the penalty for that is a Class C felony. And the references, or the potential penalty for violation of the procurement code, and I think that would probably apply to people who actually buy the flags or procure the flags under Title 3630, are listed, and they really are set out on page 2. They're a little subject to interpretation. That's why I quoted the penalty section for 3630, and for the I didn't find any specific penalty for violation of 4409.030. I spent enough time to be able to reach those conclusions, but I haven't been able to spend much time on the bill at all. I mean, not on the bill, but on the issues.
Well, thank you very much. We'll probably be contacting you on this to win our way out of these difficulties. But again, speaking only for myself, I don't have a lot of patience with some of this, because, you know, the letter of the law, also the spirit of the law involved here. Any questions for Mr. Bailey?
Yes, sir. I don't have a question, but before we adjourn,
yes.
I have a comment. Is this the time to do it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, one more. Is anybody on line, else in line, like to testify? Anybody in the audience would like to testify? Okay, we're closed for public testimony.
Do you have a minute?
Well, she will later, I think.
Okay.
Go ahead and comment.
Well, you know, we start out looking at something that appears to be a simple bill, but when you get into the meat of it, we end up criminalizing people when that's never our intention, and so I have real concern over that. But I wanted to speak a little bit to some of your opening comments about reverence to the flag. You know, we stand up and do the pledge every time we go on the floor, and I would like to know how many of our 40 members of the House have ever checked to see if that flag was manufactured in the United States.
I had not.
I don't think they care, because it is a symbol of pride. It is a symbol of what that flag represents to us, and we stand up and do that pledge every day with a great amount of pride. I grew up as a military dependent, and every day when Reveille was played and the flag was lowered, I don't care what you were doing or where you were. If you were in your car, you got out of your car, you stood next to the car, and you saluted the flag even though you couldn't see it. And so the reverence is something that's in the heart. It's not something that's in a piece of cloth that's on a wall. And so although I support the intent of this bill, I do not support the potential of what could happen. I realize this bill says that any flags that have already been purchased would not fall under that. Now we get into having an argument over, well, when was the flag purchased? Just because you didn't put it out, it could have been in a closet for 2 years before you displayed it. And it's those kinds of unintended consequences that occur when we put what, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but when we put a feel-good bill together, it doesn't always feel good to everybody. And I don't know of anybody that has more reverence for the flag than I do, but I don't care where it's manufactured. I don't care. It makes no difference to me. I don't even have to see it. You know, when you hear the Pledge of Allegiance or there's a football game on and people are standing up and singing the Star Spangled Banner, it doesn't change the way I feel whether I'm looking at the television or whether I see the flag or not. And I have greater concern over the fact that some of the policies that we have in place don't even require people to honor the flag. I mean, we have had many controversies in schools for kids that don't want to stand up and salute, and a controversy over whether or not they have to show due respect. I mean, we don't make them salute the flag if they don't want to, but we don't even always have a level of respect. Those are the kinds of things we need to focus our attention on and try to figure out ways to instill the kind of reverence that we think it should be, and whether it's manufactured in Taiwan or Tennessee, doesn't change the way I feel when I say the pledge, but I certainly understand the intent that we don't want a country that does everything they can to destroy this country to gain from the benefit of manufacturing a flag that we're going to purchase. And so I certainly agree with the intent, but it's the complications and the unintended consequences that arise from this. I don't want to make criminals out of people that shouldn't be made criminals out of. And that's,
nor do
that's
I.
My point.
Reverend Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly respect your intentions. And I don't think we're talking about a whole lot of flags here.
Why not?
I don't think we're talking about a whole lot of flags. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about state, the one right out in front of the Capitol, you know, the ones that the state buys. And it's not a whole lot of money, I can't imagine, from the procurement perspective. And I'm certainly not going to do what I can to stop this bill. I think it's fine. But for the reasons that you stated in your opening comment about what the flag means, not only to Americans but to the rest of the world, I think it's perfectly fine. And it's going to go on anyway, whether this bill passes or not, because, you know, you can go to any store pretty much and buy a flag, and there's no restrictions on where those are bought. But really, from my perspective, having those flags being put together in Taiwan spreads what the flag means around the world, you know, and carries with it everything that you said in your opening statement to other nations that look to us for those values and things that you talked about. And I think that's extremely important. So, you know, I'm not going to get in the way of this bill, but, you know, I think from that perspective it spreads what America means all across the world. If you got people across the country putting these flags together, you know, they're sitting there looking at it every day and dreaming about what it means, the dream of America. And I think that's perfectly, it's a good thing to have that that hope spread around the world of how we do things. You know, we're not the most perfect system in the world, but it's the best one in the world.
The best world we have. Very good comments for both of you. Reverend Cockrell or Reverend Dahl? Go ahead.
I was just going to speak to the amendment that you inquired about.
Well, you need to offer the amendment first. Do you want it?
I would like to just, I think I'm going to hold the amendment until the next time when you bring the bill forward.
Could you just give us an outline of what it would be if we...
This amendment simply looks at the number of flags that we have on hand, and something like 563 flags But I understand from Mr. Jones that all of these have been bought in the United States. I thought that was the substance of your comment.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dahl, I was speaking for my division, General Services. We can certainly certify that, but as far as the rest of the departments and other branches, I couldn't say for sure.
I see. Well, I think everyone has this report, the Legislative Research Report, which indicates that there's something like 303 that we have on hand that we don't know where they were purchased from. So my amendment, which I will offer the next time, would simply say that we will phase in the purchase of these American flags as we procure them.
The Chair has no objection to that at all. I don't know about the other members. If we'd want to hold off on that or do it now, whatever the will of the committee.
Let me hold on that because okay. There may be new things coming into the next meeting that'll influence.
Yeah, we have any talk on the comments?
Yes, I do, but I'll defer.
One final comment. My greatest fear on this is not so much somebody being prosecuted, you know, for having that. I mean, I don't want that to be a scenario that sets up. But I could see a situation down the line as, you know, funding for schools, for example, becomes an issue if we have declining oil revenues in the future, which we know we're going to have, and we start having tight budgets. The last thing I want to see is a school that has 100 flags in it realize, you know, none of our flags are manufactured in the United States. We can't post these, and now we have no flags posted in the school. That would be far detrimental and a far worse scenario than having a flag that was posted from a foreign country, that was made in a foreign country, that honors the flag. To me, that would be an outrageous occurrence, and I certainly would hope that that would never happen, but it certainly could under this scenario.
Well, it'd be my intent, if not in the bill now as it's presently written, I'd be happy to offer an amendment that any flags currently on hand, you know, could be flown. My chief said, did you have a comment?
No, that is the amendment.
Yes. So that is the amendment.
And that is the amendment.
If we were to pass that amendment, that would take care of that
exactly.
Situation. Representative Nicaggio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, to the procurement officer here, my thanks for already taking this issue up. And I personally think that's how it should work. You should try to do the best you can to purchase things as close to home as you can, to support your local industries, to support your state, and then to support your country. And I personally think that we should do that. And we've given guidance, I think, in some of the procurement laws. But I get a little nervous when we start making mandates, because then the argument, quite frankly, sometimes is on the mandate rather than on the respect for the flag, as was previously stated. So I don't know that I have a problem with a commerce clause problem, because in many areas of state government, we give preferences and mandates for certain things. I don't know that that's going to stop the whole United States industry from having a problem. But I think the fact that we have to mandate it becomes a problem. And then the argument then quite often will not be about the flag, but about where it was made, who's got what, you know, and we might actually inadvertently become a distraction from the very thing we want to do, and that is to honor our flag. So those things, when I first saw this bill, that was the first thought I had. I like Buy America. Go look at some of the cars I'm driving. You know, I check the tags on clothes that I buy. And quite frankly, I'm nervous about when I even have our little pin that's made in Taiwan. But the fact is, nobody in Alaska is making them. So I wouldn't want somebody to say, I can't buy a flag because there's no flag available right now, because the manufacturers in America had a cotton problem, or we had a strike or something, and I wanted to have a flag flown over the state capitol building. That's what happens. You become more interested in the process than the actual honor that the flag gives us all. So those are the kind of problems I have with a bill like this. When you start making mandates, What you do is then the decision on the mandate becomes the bigger discussion than the very thing that we're trying to protect. So I'll be looking at it, and I'm glad you're holding it over, because those were my initial thoughts when I started reading through the packet was, oh, man, I understand the intent. I like the idea. But as soon as you have a good idea and you make it mandatory, then all the things around that mandate become the issue rather than what you're really trying to get to. So just be aware that that's something that I'm going to be pondering as we go down through this bill.
Okay, any other comments on this bill as it is now? If not, we will be holding this bill as a courtesy primary for our colleague representing Grunberg. We're not going to bring this up, unless it's the will of the committee, we're not going to bring this up Saturday because we need to do some more research on this, more talking about it. I still strongly support the bill for the reasons that I stated. We'll do what the committee would like to do on this thing when the time comes. And any other business to come before the committee? Our next committee meeting then will be Tuesday. Do you have a list of what we're going to be hearing? We'll be meeting on Tuesday. We'll probably continue with this bill, as a bill previously heard. And meanwhile, let's have some discussions on this. Thank you very much. The meeting, my goodness, it's 10 minutes. We should have something to do here.
Yay. All right.
We will adjourn at 10 minutes after 9. All right.